Welcome, everyone, to the SI Media Podcast. I'm your host, Jimmy Traina. Thanks so much for giving the pod a listen. We have Kevin Clark from The Ringer on the podcast today. I've been a big fan of Kevin's for a long time, so happy to have him on for the first time. Before we get to him, and if you missed any recent episodes of the SI Media Podcast, we've had some really good ones over the last month. We have Aaron Andrews and Kyle Brandt together last week for a little roundtable. Got tremendous feedback on that. People seem to really enjoy it, so check that one out. If you're a WWE fan, Roman Reigns was on the podcast recently. Andrew Siciliano from the NFL Network and Troy Aikman, of course, from Fox Sports. So if you missed any of those, go into the archives, give them a listen, and please subscribe to the SI Media Podcast. All right, Super Bowl talk, media talk, and NFL talk right now with Kevin Clark from The Ringer. All right, joining me now from The Ringer, one of my favorite writers out there, does a great job covering the NFL, formerly of the Wall Street Journal, Kevin Clark. Kevin, how's it going?
That's going great. It's going great. It's this week gets busier every year. Like 5 years ago, it was like no one did anything the day after the Super Bowl, the week after the Super Bowl, and now it's just like wall to wall football. So it's interesting how that's been changing over the past half decade.
I have to say, I've said this for a long time now. Like for me, I feel like the NFL season ends with the conference title games. The Super Bowl is just such an event. It's not like a real Sunday football. And I have to say, Super Bowl Sunday and the Monday after, I get so depressed because I just know we have to wait so long for it again. And, you know, especially, I can get into the NBA and the NBA playoffs, especially baseball, but the next 3-4 weeks, man, are so, so rough. I can't watch college basketball in any way, shape, or form. So, you know, if you get a good NBA game, I'll be there. But other than that, man, it's a rough few weeks coming up. But like you said, you know, the NFL still seems to generate news no matter what.
I guess. I mean, there's a bit of a lull normally between the Super Bowl and the Combine, but the Combine isn't happening this year. And so there's nothing. The rhythms of the NFL schedule are kind of interrupted. And so we'll see kind of how the content mill works. But it seems to me like Deshaun Watson and Carson Wentz and now Russell Wilson and those guys are just going to keep the thing going. I remember doing a story 4 or 5 years ago, back when I was at the Wall Street Journal, and it was about how the NFL was basically trying to manufacture an offseason like the NBA. And a lot of that was that they moved free agency to prime time so they could have the NFL Network specials and all that stuff. And they were really struggling with keeping that attention. And now that's not the problem, not a problem at all. So it's really fascinating to see how that's developed.
Yeah. It's funny because you mentioned about sort of the shift in how, you know, sports scheduling and you know, I don't know how big of a ratings guy you are, but the Super Bowl ratings were down, which I think was not a surprise from the standpoint of, you know, the game was terrible, a surprise from the standpoint of you had Brady and Mahomes. Outside of the rating, which I want to get into sort of about the COVID situation and how we're consuming sports, but sure. I read something this morning I thought was fascinating. This was the 9th year in a row where the Super Bowl had a decline in the 18 to 49 rating, which, listen, obviously cord cutting is a real thing, especially with people in that age range. But it's been 9 years in a row that the 18 to 49 rating has declined. What would you even begin to chalk that up to?
So I would say that the NFL has done some research on this, and I've talked to people at the NFL level, especially league office level, and a little bit at the team level. And they've tried to figure this out for maybe 4 or 5 years now. And one of the things that has perplexed is the wrong word, but one of the things that has intrigued them is how different the younger generation is as far as they're not picking up their parents' habits as far as, okay, I was born in Pittsburgh, I'm a Steelers fan. Or I was born 3 hours outside of Pittsburgh, but my parents are from Pittsburgh. I'm a Steelers fan. It's more of fantasy football. It's more of they will travel with the player. If they love a player, whether that's Tom Brady or whether that's Derrick Henry or whomever, and they move, they will go with the player, and they'll become a Bucs fan, or they'll become wherever Derrick Henry goes in 5 years. And so I think that there's, I don't know whether or not fantasy and all that stuff has an implication on the Super Bowl in general. But what I will say is that the NFL is extremely aware of how the younger generation views their sport, and it's just a little bit different. I think they're still grappling with that a little bit. And, you know, I think that they've partnered and talked to a bunch of their sponsors, because a lot of their sponsors are trying to figure this out too. Pepsi's trying to figure out what's going on with 20-year-olds too. And I, by the way, I would extend that to the coaching staff. They don't know how to reach 22-year-olds. Bill Belichick, Les Snead, and back going back to the Jeff Fisher of the Rams, they were always giving these guys tests because they didn't know how millennials or Gen Z learn. Like, it's just, it's a generation. I include myself in this. They grew up on smartphones and different attention spans and all that stuff. Right. And so I think you can't find any layer of sport right now, and maybe the business world, where they're not trying to figure out the young people. But to answer your question in general, I would say, if I could point to one thing, it would be the NFL has known that there's changing consumer habits among the young people. And that's also just, there's just more to do. There's more channels to watch. There's more. You can just go play a PS5. I mean, like, I, you know, there'll probably be championship games and other sports where I'm just like, all right, I'll play a little FIFA instead of this. So it's just a different generation. And that's okay.
Yeah. And, you know, it's so weird to ever sort of talk about a doom and gloom NFL audience situation. Yeah. When
96 million people.
Yeah. I mean, it is pretty ridiculous that 96 million people watch, and it's like, well, what's the problem? I do think, you know, I don't know how they were going to overcome that second half, which was completely unwatchable. But I do think if, you know, the number is down from 102 last year to 96, I think it's more than just a bad second half there. I don't know if there's Tom Brady fatigue. Again, cord cutting is a real issue. I guess my question to you would be, can you just chalk up this year's lower rating just to the fact that it was a bad game?
So I would, a huge part of it for me, I mean, I don't think any of my friends have asked about the game in the last 3 days. And that's how I use my barometers, my friends from Orlando, or, you know, some of my friends who don't work in media, because I think they just saw it and it was kind of a dud, and then they moved on and maybe they didn't watch the second half. So I would have a little bit of, I would say there's probably for me, a little bit of attention needs to be paid to how every sports championship was down across the board. The Masters in November was just a rating stud. The NBA and NHL and World Series ratings were down across the board. I think they were basically halved in most cases. I think that people have been, and the NFL stuck to their schedule for the most part. They played that Wednesday game or whatever, but they played the Super Bowl on the day it was supposed to be played. But I do think there's a bit of an adjustment period because, again, the rhythms of all sports got screwed up this year. And they were competing with stuff they don't normally compete with. And, you know, throughout the season, and we've never had a Masters Sunday and then turned on the NFL. So I just think there was just a little bit of, maybe it's sports fatigue. I mean, when we talked to television executives, Jimmy, I mean, so many people said this fall was going to be the best sports fall we ever had. Right. Then the flip side of that is, like, at some point, is there a saturation point? Like, are people just like, you know what? I'm watching a lot of sports the last 3 months. So, listen, I think, again, it's hard to do doom and gloom when there's 96 million people who watch, and the TV contracts are going to climb as much as they will when they come up very soon. But I if you're going to, there's a number of factors, and I don't think there's panic on Park Avenue with the NFL.
Right. Yeah. Again, 96 million, and, you know, they probably could have gotten up to 98, 99 if the second half was watchable.
Sure.
So, I mean, I was on YouTube watching old Ali G videos in the second half of the Super Bowl. I couldn't pay attention anymore. I just could not pay attention.
Which interviews for Ali G?
Well, I mean, I always have to watch the Andy Rooney one is probably my favorite.
Gore Vidal. I often repeat the one where he mistakes Gore Vidal for Vidal Sassoon. I think about that all the time. That's the greatest fear. That legitimately happening is every interviewer's greatest fear.
When Andy Rooney keeps correcting his English and then finally throws him out, and Ali G says, "Are you throwing me out? This is racialist."
Yeah,
I will never not laugh at that line. So, and I also love the veterinarian and the veteran. That poor old man was just tortured by Sacha Baron Cohen, and at one point it almost became cruel, but it was so funny.
Yeah, it's a fine line.
I never try to, like, sit here and list numbers because it's so boring on a podcast. But since we were talking about it, because I had this in my column today, I'll just quickly do this. So the Super Bowl, like we said, was down 9%. The college football title game was down 27%. World Series down 30%. NBA Finals, 49%. Masters, which you mentioned, down 58%. And the Stanley Cup Finals were down 61%. It's a big question, and I don't know how anyone can even figure out the answer to it, but I'll be a bad host and ask it to you anyway. Let's say by September, COVID is not what it is now with most people vaccine. Maybe stadiums have, I don't know, 25, 30,000 in them. Sports gets back to some normalcy. Mm-hmm. When we get to that point, whenever it is, how do you think the pandemic will change sports viewing habits when the pandemic is over? And I mean, who knows when, I don't mean over literally where there's no, but I mean, when we're sort of on the other end of this with the vaccines.
It's a great question. I mean, I was actually thinking about this from a football standpoint the other day, because I talked to Brett Veach, the Chiefs GM, and he was saying, there's so many things we learned as a football organization over Zoom that we're going to keep. And one of them, Jimmy, was like, they are going to keep, they used to have individual meetings with scouts and coaches and ownership for draft prospects. And then with Zoom, they just put one prospect on with everybody. And then they had a more collaborative process and all that stuff. And so he's like, when life resumes, we're just going to have one meeting instead of 10 meetings. It's going to be great. Right. And so I was thinking about that, because again, every level of sports is going to change because of things they learned over the last year. I would say the sports viewing habit part of it is the most unpredictable, because it ties into what human behavior is going to be like after post-vaccine. I don't know the answer to that. I have no idea. Right. And so I think the biggest thing is going to be probably on the production side, where you're going to get, hey, we got really comfortable doing this remotely, or hey, you know what, we can actually call these college hoops games from the studio here or whatever. I think that's going to be the biggest thing. And then how do viewers react to that? I think, you know, will people want to be outside more in September, you know, on September 20th or 15th, whatever week two is of the NFL season next year? I don't know. I mean, this just all comes down to how humanity changes after the vaccine. And that's a much bigger question than I'm prepared to stake out for right now.
Yeah. And I have to say, one thing that surprised me, and it's a very small sample size, I'm going by a handful of friends and family members who I have talked to, in their 40s, kids, older parents, and I can't believe how many of them have said to me, this is not good for our business, but just, you realize that at the end of the day, like when all is said and done and you hit that pillow at night, like sports is really not that important in the grand scheme of your life. And, I don't know how that changes after a pandemic. Like during a pandemic, if you've lost your job, if you're working from home and you're doing homeschooling with your kids, you have parents you have to take care of, you're not going to make sure you're in front of the TV at 7 o'clock for a Knicks Pacers regular season game. It's just not going to, or Thursday night NFL game. And I'm curious, like you said, there's no way to sort of figure out what's going to happen. But when the pandemic is on a calmer note, it's going to be interesting to see how that mindset changes, if it changes at all.
Sure. So I'm going to push back on that a little bit, because mm-hmm. there have been times in this, in American sports history, for instance, a great example would be the World Series during World War I, where things were so serious and people just threw themselves into amusement, right? And so like the World Series expanded to 8 games in 1919. That was the fixed one. But the reason was because people were like, this war sucks, give us something. And it ended up being a fixed World Series. Congratulations on baseball for delivering that. But I just think that there's another argument, where it's like when this thing ends, people are going to want to go to a bar and watch the Knicks as much as possible, or they are going to want to watch the college football playoff at a bar. Like, I think that it's going to tie into people just wanting to let their hair down a little bit. Like, sports is the only thing, watching football is the only thing Americans do in mass still. Okay. Mm-hmm. Every other part of society in America has been splintered off because of apps, because of smartphones, because of cable, and because people don't even have cable anymore. And when you talk to, I remember talking to an NFL executive a couple of years ago, and he said that 10, 15 years ago, they used to put the NFL ratings to show owners at these owners meetings, whatever. They used to put NFL ratings against other sports, right? So NBA ratings, MLB ratings, World Cup ratings, whatever it is. And they say, hey, we're beating these sports. And then the NFL got so much more popular than every other sport because everything else started to splinter off that they only started showing it against like the Oscars and the Big Bang Theory and the things that get 30 to 40 or 50 million people. Right. And they were no longer showing it against the World Series because that competition was over. And so I think that if there is a lack of enthusiasm for football, I think that that would still be a drop in the bucket. And I still think that they have such a huge lead on everything else. But I also think that there's just the chance that people embrace it and people are like, oh man, I really, you know, legalization of gambling is a big part of that. Although that's probably going to favor niche sports a little bit more. But I do think that there's a case where in October, I don't remember the last time I was pumped for a World Series, Jimmy, but like in October, if I can go to a bar and everybody's vaccinated, I'm going to hell yeah. Give me some Justin Turner or whatever the hell, whoever the hell is going to be playing in the World Series in October.
Yeah, it's going to be, I'm fascinated to see what sports look like when we get on the other side of this thing, if we ever decide to get on the other side of this. who would have thought it, you know, it's almost a year now. And we probably, you know, if I asked you now, like week one, NFL 2021, is it going to be like a normal, regular NFL week one? I don't know how you can say yes.
No. Well, D. Marie Smith, the union head, already came out and said there's no rosy outlook for training camp.
Yeah.
For training camp to be normal. I mean, it's going to be virtual off seasons. How are you going to have OTAs in June? It's not going to happen. You know, I remember maybe April of last year when Bruce Arians was the first person to come out and said, we're going to have a quarantine quarterback, or we might have a quarantine quarterback, someone who sits in another city and he's available and he can fly down. Right. And I remember someone asking about that. I think it was Pierre or somebody. And he was like, what do you think about this? And I said, well, if this thing is still going on in October, we have so many other problems that, you know, who the quarterback is going to be the least of them. Right. And the assumption back last April was that they had the luxury of time, right? That was the big cliche. The NFL has luxury of time. Every other sport will work itself out. This thing will be kicked by the fall, whatever. I guess we as a football punditry, we're not following the news enough, but I remember the optimism because of the quote unquote luxury of time thing. And so now I think that if anything, there's a lot more realism and people are saying, okay, training camp in August, like that's not going to happen. Or at the very least, it's not going to be like it was 2 years ago. I'm not going to training camp in August, even though it's one of my favorite things to do. I understand that. There's a realism that set in over the course of last summer and over the course of the season that I think is probably healthy for the league in the long run.
I'm just curious, because you just said going to training camp is one of your favorite things to do. Why is that?
Well, I would say that, first of all, you get a feel for every single team and you get in there and everyone is kind of chill. And so you can go into Minnesota and talk to Rick Spielman and Mike Zimmer and Kirk Cousins for 20 minutes each and get a real read on a team. And I don't think you can do that once the season starts. And even the access is lessened. You know, you're not going to get Kirk Cousins after September 1st for more than 5 minutes or whatever, right? And so I think that there's so many times, Jimmy, that you can go into a place and you can figure out if the team is going to be special or not from about 5 minutes of watching, right? Like, I'm a big believer in culture and all that stuff. And you can go to some of these teams. I remember seeing the Cowboys a couple of years ago in Oxnard, and there was just nothing going on. It was a Jason Garrett team. This team doesn't have anything. Nobody's excited. It's August 13th. And then you can go to some place. I remember the enthusiasm around the Eagles the year they won in training camp. And you could just feel there was an energy to it all. And so I like the access, to answer your question. I like traveling around the country. Like, one of my favorite things in the world to do is get in a car in wherever, in Newark, New Jersey, and then drive to 20 cities and just go and spend a day in places you'd never spend a day in, like St. Joseph's, Missouri, and talk to Mahomes for 5 minutes, or drive north and go to, used to be Mankato, now it's at the facility for the Vikings, and just talk to everybody in the league. You can learn. I am never smarter than coming off the plane after 3 weeks on the road at the training camp, because that is where it is. I almost feel we're talking about it because it's like a competitive advantage. The people who don't do it, and who start their NFL coverage later, those people tend to be a little bit flat-footed. So I think that it's training camp is the cheat code for NFL coverage. It is so easy and fun, quite frankly.
So one of the things that I've always admired about you, going back to the Wall Street Journal days and with the Ringers, I feel like more than any NFL writer, you come up with angles and story ideas that are just so unique and no one else does. No one else. What is your process for coming up? I mean, how long? Because I know, you know, in this business, it's always about, you know, trying to create some content ideas, and like, I'll sit there and I'll try to think of something. I mean, how do you have a process? Is it like you said, is it just a matter of, you know, you go, you talk, you hear a nugget, you turn it into a story, but you do seem to come up with angles that other NFL writers don't come up with.
Sure. So there's a couple of things. I appreciate you saying that. But there's a couple of things I do that have helped me. And I'm not saying I'm not a person who does this, but I just think it's helpful sometimes. Is number one, I have a philosophy of, so every NFL writer gets 50 minutes in the locker room a day during normal time. And I think a lot of times there's a need is the wrong word, but I think a lot of times a lot of writers, when they don't need something, they stand in the middle of the locker room. You've probably seen it at baseball games or basketball games or football games, and they just kind of stand there. And I'm kind of annoying. And I go up to people who, you know, at minute 48, and I'll just ask, one of the things I like to do is, you know, I'll go up to a defensive end and say, hey, tell me about playing Tom Brady, or tell me about your Mahomes story or whatever. And at the very least, you're going to get 45 seconds of like, oh yeah, you know, one thing that no one talks about enough is he does this, right? And you just put it in your notebook and then you move on. And then who knows, maybe after the AFC championship game, you're going to go, oh, you know what? I had a really good conversation with this guy and he said this. I would say that I was helped by the fact that at the Wall Street Journal, the bar to get in the paper was really high. We had one story per day and we had world-class reporters everywhere, right? I was not one of those world-class reporters. And Sam Walker, our boss, he would sharpen the angles until they were ready. And so you kind of learn to pre-sharpen, if that makes sense. And the thing was always, okay, what next? And, you know, I'll give you an example. So I remember when Game of Thrones was the biggest thing in the world.
I remember, yeah.
I was like, you know, I want to do something, right? I want to do something on Game of Thrones. And if I had written NFL players like Game of Thrones, maybe it would have gotten in the paper, but 40 people would have read it and nobody would have cared. But I just kept sharpening and talking to people until I realized the actual story was that there are actual fights in the locker room because not everybody's on the same Game of Thrones episode.
Right.
And some guys are spoiling it for other guys. Some guys are doing earmuffs in the locker room. And so I went to 3 or 4 places. I went to Cleveland. I went to Washington and just did a couple. I was doing a bunch of other stuff too. But every time I saw a guy who liked Game of Thrones, I would go, hey, what's going on in the locker room right now? And like, oh, yesterday, this guy, he wasn't caught up. And so we started screaming at this guy because he had seen the Red Wedding the other day. Right. And it was hilarious. And so you learn to sharpen the angles because the bar was so high. And so the way to do that is just keep reporting until you figure out what the angle is. And then, you know, going back to what we're talking about with the kind of nugget stuff is when I would get those conversations, you know, I think probably the most read story I had at the Journal was the one where I reported that Andrew Luck complimented the guys who sack him. And that came off of
phenomenal angles to come up with. Like, thank you. Phenomenal.
But I've told the story before, but that came off of a, you know, minute 44 of 45 minute locker room session. I went up to this guy named Pernell McPhee, who's still there. He's taken some detours, but he's back. And I said, you know, tell me about what happens when you sack a quarterback. Like, who stands out? And he said, well, there's two. There's Philip Rivers and there's Andrew Luck. And I said, okay, tell me about both. And he said, Philip Rivers, because he talks so much trash over the course of a game, he just takes it so personally when he gets sacked. And he'll say, get off me. You know, it just takes it really hard. And I thought that was very funny. And then he told me the Luck thing. And I was like, yes, thank you. Like, and first of all, I'm not going to go to San Diego at that point and report a Philip Rivers hates getting sacked story. I mean, that's one of those things you put in your notebook, right? Never wrote it. Ended up just being told on a podcast 5 years later with you. But the Luck thing, I just went to 3 teams over the course of the next week. And I just went through the list, Ryan Kerrigan, a couple of the Philly guys had sacked him. And I was just telling me about this. And they were saying, here's what it is. And, you know, my old boss, Sam Walker, the best advice I've ever gotten in journalism was he said, the lead quote in every story you ever write, the lead quote should be, I've never seen anything like this, because your story should be so new and so fresh that no one has ever even considered it, right? And so that is the bar at the Journal. And when you think like that, and I remember, you know, I wasn't a good NFL writer until my third year on the beat. So you're looking at 2014. And actually, good being a relative term, I don't think I'm that good anymore or right now. But I think that there's, I just think that there, when your brain is wired like that, you are your own harshest critic, and then you end up just over sharpening the angle, I guess you could say.
Now, forgive me for not knowing this. I should have looked this up before I had you on. When you were at the Wall Street Journal, do you do a podcast for them at all? Or were you strictly a writer?
I was strictly a writer. Okay, so I wrote once a week. Yeah.
Yeah. So now over at The Ringer, and which was bought by Spotify, obviously podcasts are enormous. Mm-hmm. Do you like doing them? Was that an easy transition for you? Because some writers, you know, for instance, you know, I always wrote, I'm not a writer by any stretch, but I produce a written piece of content for SI, and I like doing podcasts. Then then everything transitions to video. I hate doing video, but I do it. So I'm just curious, as someone who's obviously, you spoke about your craft very eloquently, then you go into podcasting. What's your take on what was your, you know, feelings about doing that?
I love podcasting. And I liked it the first time I did it. I was bad when I first started doing it. And, you know, I think that I grew over the course of the season, and by 2017, I was pretty comfortable doing it. Mm-hmm. Started in 2016 when I joined The Ringer. I think that it is a reality of the industry now that, you know, I basically have three jobs. I do Slow News Day video, I do the Ringer NFL Show podcast, and then I write. And I view all three of those as completely different skill sets and completely different preparations. And I'm surprised at the people who consume one and don't know about the other two, if that makes sense. Like, there are people. I was shocked. You know, I remember early on, I remember being shocked by the fact that, you know, people at our company would say, you know, you have to say, I wrote this piece on ringer.com and it says this and this and this, because in my mind, I had writer brain when I first started there. And it's like, well, way more people are reading the piece than are listening to the podcast, right? Or that they're the same audience, or they're just, everybody is consuming everything I'm doing, right? And it's just, it's a little bit, that's just how you view it when you only do one thing, is that people are consuming it. And then you realize everything has to tie together, and you have to prepare for a podcast completely differently than you would with a written piece. Yeah. You have to, if you do talk about your written piece on the podcast, you have to do a ton of context, because those people don't even know you're a writer. They subscribe to your podcast one time, and now they're listening to it, and they like you, and they like your chemistry with the co-hosts. And so the biggest thing to me was just learning how different podcasting was from everything else.
Yeah.
And that you couldn't, it's different than going on TV, and it's different than doing a video. It's just a completely different, you know, the one thing I think that I had to learn that I didn't know, I learned it really quickly, but, you know, people just value the chemistry and the relationships with podcasts way more than, you know, a written piece. You know, if you feel like you're having a good time in a written piece, nobody cares. Okay. No one cares, and they're not going to read you. But if you're just having a good time in a podcast and you know enough to entertain and inform people, that's going to get you most of the way there. Right. And so I guess, to answer your question, I love podcasting. It's been an interesting journey, and I really love doing it. And I love doing it, starting out with Robert Mays, now doing it with Nora Princiati and the Ringer NFL Show. And I just, it is one of the great joys that the, you know, people listen, not only listen to us, but, you know, I get to create cool stuff with my friends. And so that's how I view it. And it's completely different from a written piece. I viewed the written piece as this holy thing for 3 years ago, whatever it was. And now I realized everything is important, and I have to take them all seriously.
Yeah. And then that leads into Slow News Day, which I want to ask you about, but to put a bow on sort of the writing, do you have an all-time favorite story of yours that you wrote that people listening could Google and check out?
Sure. So, I would say, so let's do the two outlets here. Cause at the Journal, I had the Andrew Luck thing, which probably changed my life a little bit, because that was kind of what I became known for. And then I kind of went to other cities, and then it was, you know, players knew who I was, and then they wanted to talk to me about their thing. So that was a big thing for me. And then I would also say, a couple weeks after that, I did the thing about how the Packers were obsessed with Settlers of Catan, which also became kind of a fairly well-read thing that also helped. And that kind of helped propel me a little bit. And I'm grateful every day that both those things happened, that the players were cooperative with it. I would say that at the Ringer, it's much more in-depth and it's much more football and it's much more rewarding. You know, at the journal, you're topping out at 1,100 words, right? And so at the Ringer, you're topping out as long as you can go. The internet is infinite. So you can do 4,000, 5,000 words and have a sense of accomplishment that you wouldn't necessarily have at the journal. Mm-hmm. And it's bigger and broader stuff. So to answer your question about a favorite story, I mean, like the George Kittle profile I wrote was really, really fun because that came together really quickly. I would say that a couple of the more, like the bigger picture pieces on, you know, I did a piece on the NFL getting much younger a couple of years ago that basically just talked about all the incoming problems with the rookie contracts and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. That I think I was probably first on. I would say the George Kittle thing, you would start there. And then you know, a couple other big meaty football pieces. But the thing that I've liked is just being able to at the Ringer is to kind of flex whatever muscle I want to flex. And okay, I want to write a profile of this guy, or I want to write this big trend piece or whatever it is. And you're able to do it. And so it's just a little bit, it's a little bit different, but I really like it. And I would also say that the piece I've done with Aaron Rodgers, I did one last year about his television, just his guide to television. The year before, we did a make him a commissioner for a day thing, where, you know, we sit down for 20 minutes and he's just so good. And everybody sees that now in Pat McAfee. But if you get 20 minutes with Aaron Rodgers, you're not going to waste a word. Like I remember sitting in a press box in Carolina and it was 3 days after I'd talked to him. And I remember calling my editor, Ryan O'Hanlon. And I was like, dude, I'm just going to transcribe this. We're putting every word into the piece because every word was good. The entire 20 minutes was good. And so when you connect with a player like that, and he has something to say, that's when actual magic happens. That is when, as Bruce Springsteen says, that's when 2 + 2 = 5.
For a guy who likes to talk about how much he hates the media, he does a lot of media, Aaron Rodgers. It's kind of funny to me.
It is really funny, but it's okay. It's okay.
It's fine. It's, you know.
I would argue though that he might do a lot of media because he wants to shape the media.
You know, but all you know, he hates the media, and then he just casually drops in that he got engaged. Like, you know, well, of course, then the media is going to run with that. But I do like that he, you know, well, I think he records all his interviews so he can prove he's, you know, not being misquoted or something like that.
Yeah, he said that on Le Batard a couple years ago, I think. Yeah.
I thought that was smart. Again, Dan Le Batard, he hates the media. He's on Dan Le Batard. He's on Pat McAfee. He's talking to Kevin Clark all the time. It's interesting. Slow news day. I mentioned it earlier. I think at least in this business, it's very hard to come up with something unique. You did that with Slow News Day. It's definitely something you don't see on other websites. I think the concept is really great. I assume you came up with that idea.
No. Kind of. Okay. So the story is basically
it's nice of you to not take full credit. I give you
So Jason Gallagher and Bill Simmons and a few other people helped shape the idea. Basically what happened was Jason Gallagher and I had this idea for a video show where we would just Gallagher is my producer, who actually just left a couple of days ago, but we had this idea where I would read the newspaper and talk about football, and maybe it was a diner gimmick or something like that. And then we put it on video and we just played around with it a little bit. And Simmons ended up watching it a couple of days afterwards. This is week two of the 2017 season. And for whatever reason, it just struck a chord with him. So we met a couple of days after that, and he had some ideas. He named it, and he was just like, "Let's really get this going." And so that was when. So the first season, we filmed it on a rooftop that we weren't allowed to be on, and it was just me and Gallagher and a couple other guys, Richie Bozick, Jackson Stefan, who are still on the crew, and it was just really fun. We did it with Ringer people, so it was just a lot of Shea Serrano, Julia Lippman, people who were on the lot. And it was really fun. It was a really good test case. And then after that Super Bowl, we got Case Keenum on. And that was the change for everything, because that was when we realized the NFL players would want to come on, especially if they're promoting a book or whatever. And we could get them to say funny things. And, you know, Case Keenum saying, "I love Peaky Blinders," was you know, got as much internet attention as Case Keenum saying, you know, I want a new contract, right? Mm-hmm. And so once we realized that happened, we just started to build off of that. And the Super Bowl last year was the one where we got some bigger guests. We got, you know, with Lamar Jackson this year. We've had Russell Wilson on. We've had really kind of a pretty much everybody at this point, except Mahomes. And my producer, Jason Gallagher, asked Obama, who gave us a polite no. But it's just been really fun because I think that those guys, like the best compliment I got at the end of the Super Bowl last year was from a TV guy who sent me a note who said that we showcase personalities better than any television network. Right. And I think that that's when you're just dealing with slow news day. Okay. That's what we're trying to accomplish. I'm not trying to do that when I'm writing. And this is what we're getting talking about when we're talking about their different jobs, right?
Yep.
I'm not trying to get anybody's personality across on a podcast. When we have Chase Daniel on or Carson Palmer or Melvin Gordon, like we did last week, I want it to be fun, but I also want Carson Palmer to break down Bruce Arians' offense. Mm-hmm. But if Carson Palmer was on Slow News Day and was just talking about Bruce Arians running go routes, I'd be like, buddy, you know, you got any television recommendations? So it's just a completely different thing what we're trying to accomplish. But to answer your question, it was literally a true collaborative effort. I just happened to be at the right place at the right time. And I've had some creative input over the course of it, but I've been extremely lucky to work with people like Bill Simmons, Jason Gallagher, and Sean Fantasy, and Mallory Rubin, and all that stuff.
Mallory's an old friend from the SI days. I'm a big Mallory.
I heard yesterday that you were at her wedding.
I was at her wedding in Duck, North Carolina. Yeah. That's
beautiful.
Great.
Yeah, she was at my wedding. I guess I didn't invite. I should have invited you as well. Just get the whole gang back together.
It was a great, great wedding, and I love Mallory. Give me in all the Slow News Days you've done, give me a time where an athlete said something where you were like taken aback, and I don't mean it in a negative. It could either be something funny, something surprising, something you wouldn't expect them to say. But like, what was like an shit moment for you when someone said something on Slow News Day?
So I would say this. So we had Phil Simms on last year, and there was a moment with Phil where it clicked for him that this was funny. Okay, that this was funny, and then he went into full roast mode of me, and it was magic. And it was unlike anything you've ever seen with Phil when he's with Nance or at the desk and with Cower or whomever. And he was just like making fun of me for being a bad reporter and saying, what the hell kind of show is this? I mean, just the craziest stuff. And it was just like, I remember Roger Sherman was there and he was just, he was my colleague. And he's like, who was the guy on TV for 20 years? Like what? We just turned Phil Simms into Howard Stern. Right.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. And I really like that. And that's something that we take pride in when we're there. I would say an athlete, I'll tell you one that I really liked and it showed you where, what kind of show we're trying to do is I remember Larry Fitzgerald was on and we were at the Minnesota Mall of America and I said to him, I said, you grew up in Minnesota. Like, do you have any memories of this mall? And he was like, yeah, I used to make out in the movie theater. And he's describing the make out. And it was just like, yes, this is perfect. So it's just stuff like that where we want guys to feel really comfortable. And all of a sudden they're talking about make out sessions in a movie theater at the Mall of America.
Right.
You know, we have not had any like crazy, bombshells or anything like that on the show. I'm trying to think, you know, I mean, I remember Lamar Jackson saying this and I think it probably, it got attention at the time, but I don't think we thought about it enough during the season where I said, what is it going to be like? We talked to him in June. And I said, what is it going to be like when there's no crowds? And he said, the season is going to be an intense practice. And like, and there was a raw honesty. And that was probably true for a lot of guys. You know, you hear, there's a lot of people who are just like, this is not anything that we're used to. And so it's been really cool to get that sort of candor.
If you had, I know you mentioned Obama, but is there anyone you've been trying to get of a lesser stature that won't come on that frustrates you?
Cause I
know
I won't come on. That won't come on.
You thought I have guys, I thought twice I was going to have John Krasinski on this podcast both times at the last minute it fell through. And I still have nightmares about
that. I've gotten Mahomes for print interviews, not for Slow News Day. Mm-hmm. He's probably number one. I would say number one would be Eddie Vedder. And then I would say number two. So if it's not football, it would be either Eddie Vedder or Jason Isbell, right? And I'm not even sure if either of them like football enough to where it'd be an entertaining show, yeah. right? Like, I went on Zach Lowe's podcast a couple months ago, and at the end of it, we were joking around, and he was just like, I wish I liked football enough to just give you two sound bites, and then we can get on to the other stuff on Sunday's day, right? And who knows? Maybe we can get Zach Lowe on one day, and we can figure out the football part of it. But Mahomes would be number one, because I think that having spent some time with Mahomes in one-on-one settings, he has an incredible personality, and he's really funny, and he's really thoughtful, and he would be one of the best guests ever. Right. And so this year we were able to get, because of Zoom, some folks that I always wanted on. Chris Collinsworth is one of them. Adam Schefter is one of them. I would say that Romo was always talked about as one of our number ones. Romo would be an unbelievable one. I know that, you know, you can get Romo. I can't
get Romo. That's the problem.
But thanks, no, CBS. For us, a lot of times a great slow news day guest is different from anything else. And right. So they'd have to be funny. They'd have to be thoughtful. They'd have to be able to think on their feet, and almost kind of like Phil Sims, where Phil Sims is kind of the model guest, right? I mean, Jason Witten came on last year at the Super Bowl and never got the show. And, you know, it was kind of I like Jason Witten. He seems like a very nice person. That was not a great 8 minutes. Okay. We did not have a great 8 minutes with Jason Witten. Derrick Henry, you know, was the same day, and he grew to sort of understand why we were asking about whether or not he had to bring his birth certificate to Pee Wee games, you know, stuff like that. And he kind of got it.
Right.
I don't want to sound like Dan Lebatard here, but like getting the show is the most important part.
Right.
And now, that's sort of how we scout.
Do you usually speak to the person and do the interview for a certain amount of time, or is it because what we see is obviously, if you know, I watched the ones with Terry Bradshaw, which I thought was hysterically funny.
He was amazing, wasn't he?
He was great. But I'm curious how long you usually go, and then what you narrow it down to, because editing is obviously a big part.
So it depends. In those situations, Bradshaw or Saquon Barkley or Christian McCaffrey, you're looking at 10 minutes because they're busy. When it's Russillo, it could be 30 minutes. When it's Mina Kimes, it could be, I think Mina and I have gone for 45 minutes and then gotten yelled at by the crew afterwards, especially when we're in person and it's not, you can't even see, you know, you don't have to worry about cell phone battery or whatever.
Right.
Lamar was something like 20. And so I would say that a lot of times we can get it down to about 10 minutes, and there's conversations or whatever that we're just not allowed. Like Russillo and I did probably 5 minutes on the NBA on this week's show, and none of it made it because we just didn't have time for it. So the key is just get these guys, especially when it's athletes, get these guys in a position where they only have to do 3, 4, or 5 minutes of good stuff. You know, Christian McCaffrey was really good for 13 minutes or whatever we got him for, but he was really, really good for 4 minutes. And talking about the guy who yelled Heisman at him, or talking about Dustin Poirier because he's a big UFC fan. If we had run that whole 13-minute interview, it would have been an amazing podcast. It would have been an amazing video to just put up, and his analysis of X, Y, and Z and the game and all that stuff. But then if you just take the funny parts of it, do quick cuts, throw some jokes in there, that's how it becomes a slow news day. And that is all credit to the people around me, not me.
Well, like I said, I mean, it's really tough to get unique content going these days. So it's good to see something like that. Because I remember the first time, so I was like, I like this concept here, something new, something good. I want to get to this, back to the Super Bowl for one sec before we wrap.
Sure.
I was expecting less, I was expecting my inbox to not be barraged as much by PR stuff because of the pandemic, but that was a mistake. I could not even believe the pitches I was getting last week. Do you get that too?
A little bit. I mean, it was mostly go to Brian Curtis.
Okay.
Our amazing sports media reporter.
Yeah. He's been on the podcast before. It was quite interesting to see that what people were pitching. And, you know, if any PR people are listening to this, please don't pitch like doctors speaking about the pandemic. It's just not good. I don't know if you can answer this because you do work for a podcast company in Spotify, but are there podcasts out there that impress you that,
Yeah.
Not even just like your favorites that you listen to, but like, are there ones where you're like, you know, that's unique, or this is a, you know, this is something I wish I would have thought of, or something like that?
Oh, ones I would have thought of. What ones I wish I thought of. So I like all different sports. Right. And so a lot of the niche sports for me, my favorite podcast in the world is probably No Laying Up. It's a golf podcast. Mm-hmm. And it's just a very simple formula, which is it's four friends. And after golf tournaments on Sunday night, they sit in the same house and they talk about the tournament. It's really funny. They all have different personalities. You know, my inspiration for everything is always going to be the Bill Simmons podcast and the BS Report going way back to when I listened to it in college. That, and then there's another podcast, soccer podcast. It's no longer, the group's no longer together. It's called the Guardian Football Weekly. And they kind of broke up and went to separate ways, although that podcast still exists. And you learn how important just people getting together, again, having a good time and entertaining you and informing you is. And that Guardian was the same thing, where it was four folks who just got together and said, hey, this is what happened on Sunday. So I would say that No Laying Up is definitely my number one right now. I love Errol Hawani's podcast, Daniel Cormier for MMA. Trying to think of what else. I mean, as far as structures go, you know, I think that some of the narrative podcasts we've seen over the past couple of years have just been unbelievable and gripping. And I think that takes a lot of work. But I think that there's just a lot of room for exploration there. At some point I'd like to probably explore that. The podcast boom is amazing because you just find out how many creative people there are. And, you know, on the NFL side, you know, Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks have a podcast that is just awesome. And the insights are from two dudes who've been in the league are just fantastic. I think that there's so much good quality content right now that if you want to be a smart sports fan, you can. And I think I think there's a lot of complaints right now because people just like to complain about stuff. It is the best time ever to be a sports fan, ever. Because you have so much quality content on pods, on TV, whatever. You have so many resources available, whether that's statistical, whether that's articles. Like I went the other day before I was doing Simmons Pod, I read three articles on Pro Football Focus by Seth Galina, Deontay Lee, and then one other. And I came away from each one having a completely different perspective of the game and just being like, oh, I didn't think about that. Even if it's one line. And so I think that if you seek it out and you want to be a educated, informed, entertained sports fan, you can. And that's what I love right now is that if I want to listen to No Laying Up thing and just listen to jokes about Tony Finau, I can. And I love that. It's my favorite thing in the world. But if I also want to see strokes gained and figure out what's going on with Tony Finau in the short game or whatever, I can do that too. So the world is kind of your oyster right now if you're a sports fan.
What do you have any slow news days coming up that we should know about? Any guests you want to promote anything here? I got distracted when I asked that question because I just saw that starting February 23rd, stadiums and arenas in New York will be able to reopen for sports and musical performances, which I find shocking. So that's like a concert. Like I can go see Billy Joel at Madison Square Garden starting February 23rd.
I live at
10%, 10% capacity.
10%. Billy Joel at 10%. Okay.
10% capacity, 10,000 person total capacity. This is a good topic for that's a great. Can you imagine seeing a concert with 10% capacity? It's phenomenal. I think. It's like
Is that good? Would you like to see like Bruce Springsteen with 10%? Okay.
Not Bruce Springsteen, not but Bruce. Someone else. Yeah, I'm the one sports writer that doesn't like Bruce's music, but
Who would be your number one 10% attendance guy or gal?
It's an interesting question because I'm trying to figure out. So like Billy Joel plays, I don't even know. Are you in, where are you based at? Where do you live?
We live in Los Angeles, but a couple of months ago, because of everything that was going on, we decamped and now we're in St. Augustine, Florida. We'll return to normal life when everything else resumes.
So I don't know how many people outside of New York know this, but pre-pandemic, Billy Joel does a monthly concert at Madison Square Garden.
Yes.
That sells out every time. It's amazing. It's crazy.
It's an event. It is an event. And when people are going, they tell everybody.
But it's just such a great thing that like you can wake up on a random day and be like, you know what, I'll just go see Billy Joel. Like he's at Madison Square Garden every month. So, and I've seen it many times, but I have to say a 10% capacity. You know, listen, Billy just sits at the piano and plays his like 40 songs, you know, and it's a great show. I think a show like that is better in a 10% capacity than somewhere where, like, you know, the artist is going crazy and running and dancing. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, here's the question. Does the show change? So if you're going to see Springsteen at a 10%, I don't want to bring up Springsteen again because you're anti-Springsteen, but yeah. Does he go full acoustic if it's 10%? Does Billy Joel he doesn't even play the
Billy Joel's show wouldn't change a drop because he just sits at a piano and plays songs.
So Nathan Hubbard, who does our golf podcast and is a music industry mogul, he made the point that Taylor Swift's new album was made because there are no stadiums to play it in, right? It would have been much bigger and much more poppy if you had to then go play New Meadowlands Stadium with it or Gillette Stadium, right? You can just sit there and do the folksy slow stuff with the National if you're in quarantine. And so I'm wondering now if we do have a while of 10%, if it's like, okay, let's just change everything to be more chill because it's not the same energy. Like when I go see Pearl Jam every 3 years when they tour, the crowd is the thing, right? Like if they were playing in front of me and it was just me and 10 friends, I would really enjoy that.
Right.
But the most fun thing in the world is being on the floor and the energy of it all. And so I'm curious to see, Jimmy, what happens if that becomes the norm for, let's say, a year. And not 10%, maybe it's 25%, maybe it's 50%. I will say that the St. Augustine Amphitheater down the road here appears to be advertising concerts in March, and I don't know if they're limited attendance, and I think that might just be a Florida thing.
Well, Corona doesn't exist in Florida, so you're good
it
there.
Sure doesn't.
Yeah.
It sure doesn't.
Yeah, like, I don't think I'd want to see, like, the Foo Fighters at 10% capacity, because I feel like that's there's an energy that you need there. Whereas Billy Joel is singing Just the Way You Are, and you know, you could sit there and, you know, rock your head back and forth while he does that. All right, sorry for going off on that tangent, but that was
amazing.
That, and also, so I guess Yankees and Mets will have 10,000 people in the stands starting in the regular season. So slow news day. I wanted to give you a chance.
Yeah, so we had the season finale this week with Ryan Russillo that went up yesterday. I just tweeted it out again. We're gonna take a little break for the next couple of weeks. And then the schedule at this point is to come out with them when there's news. So when Wentz is traded, we'll have an emergency one with probably Chris Ryan and some Philly folks, right? Yeah. When Deshaun Watson is traded, you know, I think the last year we had when Mahomes signed his extension, we had Nick Wright and Mina Kimes on within 30 minutes. So there's the template for the emergency slow news day that will be trotted out. And then once draft season starts going, we'll be back with our full slate and all that stuff. So we're going to take a couple week break. The podcast, Ringer NFL Show, will continue throughout the offseason. That starts this week. And then the writing stuff is kind of ever present. So it'll be cool. And I'll probably get to dip my toes a little bit in some non-football stuff. I wrote a couple articles about golf and soccer last year. And the off season is for that kind of thing. So it'll be cool. Check out this week's Slow News Day and then hang on for more.
Yeah, I like how you tied this. The podcast started with me saying this is a depressing time here for the next couple of weeks in terms of sports. And you just said your show's on hiatus for a couple of weeks. So I feel like I was validated. So I think
should we come back just to bring some joy, Jimmy?
I mean,
people demand it. No, I'm kidding. Demand 4 minute interviews with Ryan Russillo.
I think, listen, you get 4 minutes with Ryan Russillo at any time, people will watch it. I think we all know that. So.
Yeah, no, it's he's the best. There's a Mount Rushmore of Slow News Day guests, and he's on.
Well, I appreciate you coming on, and like I said, you know, I'm a big fan of the column and stuff like that. And Slow News Day is, like I said, it's always enjoyable. So, thanks for giving me some time.
I appreciate you saying that. It's all, 99.9% of it is the people around me. But I'm happy to hop on and talk about it with you.
Excellent. I enjoyed it. Thanks so much for coming on. All right, my thanks to Kevin Clark from The Ringer. Really enjoyed speaking to him. Wanted to have him on for a while. Glad he was able to do it. If you've missed any recent episodes of the SI Media podcast, dip into the archives and check them out. Kyle Brandt and Aaron Andrews together last week for a roundtable. Very fun episode. Great feedback on it. So if you missed it, give that one a listen. Roman Reigns from the WWE on recently, as well as Andrew Siciliano, who hosts the very popular Red Zone channel. Troy Aikman as well on the podcast recently. Give those a listen, subscribe, rate, and review. All right, that wraps it up for this week's episode of the SI Media Podcast. We'll see you next week. Stay safe and take care.